This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Michelle Franzen. Tyler Robinson set to make a virtual appearance in court this hour to face charges in the shooting death of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. Utah County Attorney Jeff Gray says they're seeking the death penalty.
Because we are seeking the death penalty, the defendant will continue to be held without bail in the Utah County Jail.
Prosecutors alleging Robinson confessed to his roommate and partner in texts that he did it. ABC's Matt Gutman is in Utah.
I don't know if we have seen an alleged murder with such specific text messages about the alleged murder weapon, where it was hidden, how it was placed, what was on it. But also, it was very touching in a way that I think many of us didn't expect. A very intimate portrait into this relationship between the suspect's roommate and the suspect himself, with him repeatedly calling his roommate, who is transitioning, calling him my love, and I want to protect you, my love.
This is ABC News.
You're listening to 1490 WLCX, La Crosse's home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Could Wisconsin State Capitol see additional security? That's what some lawmakers are proposing. With more, here's Civic Media's Savannah Toma-Yulson.
Wisconsin lawmakers are again talking about their safety after the assassination of right-wing figure Charlie Kirk. Kirk was shot and killed from 200 yards away during a speech in Utah on Wednesday. And months ago, Minnesota State Representative Melissa Hortman and her husband were gunned down in their home, while another state rep and his wife were shot. Minority Leader Democrat Greta Neubauer says security decisions are in the hands of Republicans.
Given the recent rise in political violence, of course, this is top of mind for many of our colleagues and, of course, the staff who work in the Capitol as well, the press, the guests, the children that come through this building on Capitol visits. So it's an ongoing conversation, and we hope to continue that with our Republican colleagues who, of course, control the safety in our chambers, as well as the other entities in the Capitol.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says he's open to lawmakers using funding for their offices to increase security at their homes.
I am very confident in the police force that we have inside the Capitol. If you look at the incidents that have occurred, frankly, when you look at Minnesota, it was in their homes. If you look at what happened yesterday with Charlie Kirk, it was in a public venue on a campus. So the idea that we're somehow going to fortify a single building to make people feel safer, when the reality is that most of the violence that has occurred has not been inside a government building, it's been outside or at people's home. One of the things we have talked about is the possibility of people having using their office account for security at their home. You know, if they want to do that, I'm open to that idea.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei-Olson.
A proposal in the last legislative session failed to advance to a vote. Download the free Civic Media app now at civicmedia.us/app. For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
An update on Watson. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NFL, Packers receiver Christian Watson, recovering from a torn ACL, spoke to reporters. Wide receiver Jaden Reed is out for the next couple of months with a broken collarbone. So how close is Watson to returning to action?
Obviously, I got to get clearance from the medical team and whatnot, but I've got to feel 110% confident, and I'm going to be able to go out there and be Christian Watson, not 90%, or I need to be 100% of Christian Watson before I get out there.
The Wisconsin Badgers team frustrated after their 38-14 loss in Alabama over the weekend. Head coach Luke Fickell asked, does he ever get mad at his players after a poor performance?
No, you're always trying to say, okay, what's going to be the best, not for me, because it feels better sometimes to put your hand through a wall or put your head through a window, right? Yeah, that feels good at times. In the long run, I don't know what it does for us.
Baseball, the Brewers and Angels tonight at American Family Field. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
1490 WLCX, real news and great conversation for La Crosse, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, warm and muggy with a low in the mid-60s. Hot and humid again tomorrow, high in the mid-80s, some showers and storms in the late afternoon, with increasing clouds throughout the day. Storm chances continue tomorrow night, Thursday, and Friday. Currently, it's 87.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most, in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Ahoo, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
This week, we sit down with Wisconsin Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, and she talks about her run for Lieutenant Governor.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker, Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
They're not there to serve you and me and the family farmer. They're there beholden to billionaires and their corporate overlords.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
You see our nation fraying and fracturing.
This is not normal. This is not the country that I grew up in.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Correct. We know better. We know better.
Clip that.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a bunch of breaking news, but I wanted to take this moment to remind everyone that today happens to be National Voter Registration Day. In the midst of all of the political tumult, in the midst of our nation's tragedy last week, it is our nation's tragedy, a political assassination. In the midst of that tragedy, it does us all a world of good to remind ourselves that in a democracy, no matter what our differences, we express them through the ballot box at the end of the day. And we can talk about how to properly secure our elections, how to audit them, how to make sure that duly qualified citizens are voting. We can have that debate. But at the end of the day, no matter what your view on politics or politicians or public policy, whatever that view may be, you do yourself and our country the greatest of honors by voting. And so today, take the opportunity to check your voter registration. We don't have fall elections here in the state of Wisconsin, but we got big ones coming up in 2026, and they will start quick. So take this opportunity to check your voter registration, to reach out to your friends and family, to remind them to do the same. You can do that at myvotewi.gov. Check your registration. If you don't find yourself registered, if you've moved, take the time to get your voter registration done. You don't have to wait for an election cycle. You can do that now. Again, it is National Voter Registration Day. This is how we do it here in the United States. Your vote matters. It matters a lot. And so take this opportunity to ensure that you are a full participant in our democracy. Again, that's myvotewi.gov. Please do us all that favor and make sure you are registered to vote. And again, share that information. Remind folks, say it's voter registration day. Send a couple of texts out. Reach out to people. You will have done your duty today by reaching out to folks you know to remind them and checking your own registration. Again, at myvotewi.gov. Let's talk about a little bit of news. This is a little bit off the beaten path, but I wanted to share it with you because it is shocking. A data broker that is owned by the country's major airlines, including American and United and Delta, is selling access to 5 billion, that is 5 billion with a B, plane ticketing records to whom? The United States government. This will allow our government, our federal government, to engage in what amounts to warrantless searching and monitoring of people's movements in our country, including monitoring by the FBI, the Secret Service, ICE, and many other agencies. According to a new contract and other records that were reviewed by 404 Media, want to give credit here, that's who's breaking the story. This is 404 Media. The contract, again, obtained by 404 Media, provides new insight into the scale of the particular data, your data, if you've flown on an airplane or fly to any time in the near future, your data that will be shared with the federal government without your consent. This data is owned by the Airlines Reporting Corporation, which is owned by the airlines. Okay, so in effect, it's the airlines agreeing to provide billions of passengers' detailed information to the federal government. This is related to more than 270 carriers, meaning airlines and their regional partners, and is sourced through more than 12,800 travel agencies across the country. Previously, this data gathering service, the ARC, told the government not to reveal to the public where they were getting this data. Don't tell the public that we, the airlines, gave you, the government, sold it for our benefit, our monetary benefit, sold all these people's private information. It'll include your full name, full flight itineraries, and financial details. I don't know about you, but I've never liked Big Brother, and this makes me very, very nervous. Kash Patel also basically kind of lost his marbles today in testimony before Congress. He was being questioned by Senator Adam Schiff, and it didn't go so well. Let's take a listen. We've got two sounds. Let's take a listen to the first.
So let me just be precise, and I asked for a yes or no answer. Did you ever terminate or discipline an FBI employee in whole or in part because they had been assigned or worked on an investigation of Donald Trump or January 6th?
FBI
yes or no?
Employees are only terminated
yes
if they
no,
failed
Mr.
to
Patel.
Uphold their oaths of
yes
office
or no?
and duty.
You're not answering my question.
I don't have to answer your question yes or no, because you're setting up a trap so you can have a media narrative.
No, I'm not setting up a trap.
And I'm
unless,
not giving it to
unless
you.
Unless it's true that you fired people.
People have been terminated at the FBI who failed to uphold the standards that the FBI requires them to uphold.
Did you?
Unbelievable, right? It's a pretty simple question. If your directive as an agent was to investigate XYZ, you've got a boss that tells you to do that. There were indictments that were issued based upon a grand jury, which is how our legal process works. That there was an indictment. You're supposed to help investigate it. That should not be grounds for firing. Perhaps the follow-up question from Senator Schiff was, explain to me why someone following a directive from their FBI superiors to conduct an investigation of the president or of January 6th, where indisputably people were hurt and cops were beaten, why in God's name would that not comport with the FBI standards of conduct and ethics? That would be a good, explain that to me. And then this exchange, which got even more off the rails, take a listen.
You clearly won't tell us the cabinet members associated with Mr. Epstein. Let me ask you one last question. And that is, right after she gives this testimony in front of an FBI agent, among others, she's transferred to a minimum security prison not suitable for a sex offender like herself. Who made that decision and why?
The Bureau of Prisons.
The Bureau of Decisions made it
in prisons.
The Bureau of Prisons decided on their own, without any consultation with Blanche or anyone else, that they were going to suddenly, after this interview, completely unrelated to this interview, completely unrelated to anything she said, move her to a prison not suitable for a sex offender. You want the American people to believe that? Do you think they're stupid?
No. I think the American people believe the truth, that I'm not in the weeds on the everyday movements of inmates. What I am doing is protecting this country, providing historic reform, and combating the weaponization of intelligence by the likes of you. And we have countlessly proven you to be a liar in Russiagate, in January 6th. You are the biggest fraud to ever sit in the United States Senate. You are a disgrace to this institution and an utter coward.
I'm not surprised.
I'm not surprised that you continue to lie from your perch and put on a show so you can go raise money for your charade. You are a political buffoon at best.
Well, you can take an internet troll.
Take it to the bank that the FBI is protecting this country and the state and citizens of California. We are bringing historic reform.
Point of order.
But all you care about is a child sex predator that was prosecuted by a prior administration, and the Obama Justice Department and the Biden Justice Department did squat. And what did President Trump do? Bring new charges courageously. And what have we done?
Chairman,
you said
take
I'm the most transparent FBI director in history. 33,000 pages of information to you. I challenge you to say anything credibly to the truth. Go ahead and run to the cameras where you want to go now.
Both of you be quiet.
Okay. So just a couple of things. Everything that Kash Patel is what Kash Patel is. A liar, a coward, a political buffoon. Wants to run to the cameras. You make money off of this. You've never stood up for anything. He's talking about 33,000 pages. Yep, we had all seen them already. They're trickling out more information. It wasn't until James Comer, who I rarely agree with, but is a Republican that leads the House Oversight Committee, and Democrats demanded the release of this stuff, that any of it got released. Patel and Bondi signed the memo back in May where it was like, nothing to see here, everybody. Kash Patel, in dozens of appearances on right-wing podcasts, before he became the FBI director, himself profited off of Pizzagate, the big lie that Democrats were running a global sex ring. Turns out it was Jeffrey Epstein. Turns out it was Donald Trump who sent Epstein a really creepy, skeevy birthday note. So the American people might buy that you're not, quote, in the weeds, Mr. Patel, except for the fact that you have been in the weeds on the Epstein matter for over a decade. There is no way that the FBI director could credibly claim anywhere. The guy just lied his butt off in a congressional hearing that he would not be aware of the transfer of Ghislaine Maxwell to a minimum security prison, which she's never supposed to be allowed in because she's a convicted child sex criminal. That's not the weeds. It was the biggest thing in the news for months. It's the thing that Mr. Patel made money off of, amongst others. That's not the weeds. Here was the weeds. Here's weeds that the FBI director shouldn't be in. Discussing evidence on the social media accounts of the FBI and Mr. Patel. Discussing the evidence before any other law enforcement agency had discussed it. Relating to the assassination of Mr. Kirk, making statements about that investigation at all without coordinating with other law enforcement agencies and the prosecutors who will take the lead, which are state prosecutors, because Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche today said, what? The feds aren't rushing to indict the man who killed Charlie Kirk. So the FBI director actively lying, misinforming, and misdirecting Congress, and then, I don't know, telling Adam Schiff that he's the problem for asking the question. By the way, the Federal Bureau of Prisons is a subdepartment, a division of what? Everyone together now, say it with me, the FBI. It is under the direction of the Attorney General and the FBI. I don't know, if you were working at the Federal Bureau of Prisons and you were about to move an inmate who had just been interviewed by the Deputy Attorney General for the issue that had been in the headlines every single day, do you think you'd just, I don't know, make that decision on your own and hope it all sorts out for Donald Trump? Would you? You just wouldn't run it up the chain. Oh yeah, we'll just change this coding here, we'll move her, nobody will notice. Give me a break. The FBI director is a liar and a profiteer. I'm going to continue with some of the local news on the other side. A school district of Cudahy employee is out of her job, also from some postings about Kirk. That discussion continues on.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Joe Zepecki.
As much as I disagree with Charlie Kirk, no American should ever face physical violence for what they believe. And maybe that's how we get past it and move forward, is just say, this is not about we can't get to a period of political violence. We're in one, and now we got to get out of it. And we have to recognize each other's humanity.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network, because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on lacrosseeagle.com/contest-terms. Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've been reviewing some of the day's headlines. If you'd like to get your thoughts or comments in, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to be joined by Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. He's announced formally announced his candidacy to be Wisconsin's next governor in 2026. We'll sit down with David starting at 4:30. Let's go to the phones. We got Dick from Madison on the line. Wanted to give Dick a crack at it. Dick, what are your thoughts this afternoon? Some absolute gaslighting happening on Capitol Hill by Kash Patel.
Well, I apologize if you played it before that last back and forth, but did you see the one with Cory Booker? Oh, my Lord.
Booker, similarly atrocious. What did Mr. Booker try to ask Mr. Patel?
He basically told him, you're gone. You're out of a job soon. Right to his face.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. You've got to find it. He just flat out told. He says, this guy has no loyalty to you whatsoever. Basically told him, you know, you're short. You got a short lifespan here in this position. It was great.
The question about that for me, thanks so much, Dick, is that's effectively, you know, a threat from Senator Booker. And if that doesn't materialize, you know, I don't know that that is particularly helpful from Democrats. I just don't think it is. That kind of rhetoric, I don't know, in my mind, it might make for a good and punchy headline, but it's more likely than not to cause the president to back Mr. Patel despite caboodles of evidence, much like Pete Hegseth leading the Department of Defense, that even their top-ranking loyalists can see that these guys are complete and utter, oh, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for here? Political hack job buffoons? Oh, yeah, the very thing that Kash Patel accused Senator Schiff of being, the political buffoonery, that's coming from a guy who's sitting as the current FBI director who used to proudly market himself when he was on podcasts and talking about all these conspiracy theories as K-A dollar sign H, as in cash, cash, money, Patel. And he wants to talk about Adam Schiff trying to run a grift? Kash Patel is Mr. Grift. Maybe he's Mr. Grift JV style when compared to the president, but he's still Mr. Grift. That's who Cash Money, Money, Money Patel is. Unbelievable. Gene from Eau Claire, you're up next. Go ahead.
Thank you. Outstanding. Thank you so much for playing that, because a lot of people don't know where to find this information. I watch live. I could not believe the guy. It's very alarming that people like this are sitting in those important offices in the U.S. government. People need to start paying attention live, not what people are feeding them, and watch it, because you will not believe it. It will give you nightmares that these people were even put in those offices by Republicans. And
by Republicans?
Those, yes, yes. Unbelievable. Thank you. Keep up the great work, Maggie. Bye.
Thanks. Thanks, Gene from Eau Claire. You want to get in on this action, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. One thing that we used to try to expect when you saw department heads or others testifying before senators or House members was some modicum of decorum, okay? I have been asked questions by legislators that were stupid. I'll admit it. I'll use the S word. They asked me stupid questions. Questions that they should have known. Questions that was in the executive summary, answered very clearly. Questions that were loaded, that were intended to prove some kind of political point. And my job was, no matter how inflamed or aggressive the questioning from those elected officials became, no matter how stupid the question, how political the motivation, or frankly, to summarize it, how bad faith the question was, it was my job to sit there and answer it correctly, completely, accurately, and with respect. Where has that gone? You watch village board hearings, common council meetings, even debates in state houses, and they will kick out members of the public for far less than the behavior that we just witnessed from Kash Patel. And the failure of the Republican chairman to step in and tell Mr. Patel to mind his manners is itself despicable. Kurt from Madison, go ahead, sir.
Well, I hate to be a buzzkill, but I'm a political junkie, and I've watched pundits over and over and over the years. First Trump presidency, he said this, he's toast, he's toast, he's toast. I'm sorry. This is all showmanship. Nothing's going to change. This is a joke. I'm grossly discouraged, and I have given up on any justice in our system. It doesn't exist anymore. We have the sixth, we undermine our Constitution. So this again, nothing will become of it. Nothing.
Thanks so much, Kurt. Two things I want to say. One is, no, I don't think Cash Money, 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 Money Patel is going to lose his job soon, even though he is a political buffoon, a liar, and a coward. Do I think that there can be justice of some kind? I certainly do. And if I didn't, I wouldn't get on this program with all of you fine folks every day and talk about how to do that through voting and through speaking out. I'm here with you every day because I retain some hope. Some days it's harder than others. Jenny from Madison, welcome to the show. What do you got for us?
Oh, my gosh. So do you remember Aziz Ansari's character?
Yes.
From Parks and Recreation?
Okay. Yes.
He makes Kash Patel look like an absolute idiot. And Aziz's character was an idiot. So I just...
I hear you, Jenny. Thanks so much. We got to take care of some business. A little humor to go out at the bottom of this half hour. You're going to want to stick around. Coming up next, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley joins us to discuss his run to become Wisconsin's next governor, to bridge the gap and to help forge a pathway forward for Wisconsin. Stay tuned, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to 1490 WLCX, La Crosse's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Wisconsin Republicans are putting together a package of bills to reform education in Wisconsin. With more, here's Civic Media's Savannah Tomei Olson.
These bills aren't even drafted yet, so there weren't a ton of details available at a press conference this week. But Republicans in the Assembly focused heavily on districts with declining enrollment and declining funding. One of their big solutions is to encourage more districts to combine. There are more than 400 of them across Wisconsin, and record numbers of them are going to referendum, asking residents to increase their own taxes just to keep the district afloat. Representative Amanda Nedweski from Pleasant Prairie.
Consolidation has long-term positive effects on both students and taxpayers. So we need to stop the cycle of never-ending referendums. Now, Democrats might argue that the solution is simply to throw more money at the problem, but it does not solve the issue that there are just less kids being born today than there were 20 years ago.
School advocates and administrators say declining enrollment isn't the problem. It's the formula itself and a lack of funding from lawmakers. State school aid has not kept up with inflation for more than a decade. Republicans' plans also include revamping the math curriculum and what they're calling a teacher's bill of rights, which they say would standardize discipline for students. They also want Wisconsin to opt in to a federal school choice program passed as part of President Donald Trump's Big Beautiful Bill earlier this year. Assembly Minority Leader Greta Neubauer criticized Republicans' plans, saying, quote, Republicans' K-12 education plans won't address the challenges facing working families or give our kids the opportunities they deserve. We shouldn't be talking about consolidating districts. We should be investing in our local schools, end quote. For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Some of the Republicans' proposals have already been brought up in the legislature in past sessions and failed. For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. If this past weekend box office earnings are any indication, anime has completely arrived. Demon Slayer Infinity Castle found itself at the top of the box office with a $70 million opening weekend. Its opening day take of $33 million was the highest opening ever for an anime film. Last week's number one film, The Conjuring Last Rites, held off three challengers for the number two spot and a take of $26 million. The three new releases include Downton Abbey, which brought in 18 million big ones in its first week of release to finish at number three. The Stephen King-inspired The Long Walk pulled in $11.5 million over the weekend. The film is based on King's first novel of the same title. And in fifth place was sort of a new release, or more accurately, a new re-release, as Toy Story brought in over $3 million on over 200 screens, giving it a massive haul of $195 million dating back about 30 years. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 1490 WLCX.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, warm and muggy with a low in the mid-60s. Hot and humid again tomorrow, high in the mid-80s, some showers and storms in the late afternoon, with increasing clouds throughout the day. Storm chances continue tomorrow night, Thursday, and Friday. Currently, it's 87.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Talk about overall mental health, how we cope with this nonstop, overwhelming news. Tom, thanks for calling. What say you?
Nobody can do push-ups indefinitely. But bring this back to mental health, and suddenly we feel able to pound through this without taking any kind of a break. And it's just not the way that it works. So do any action that takes you away from whatever it is that you're stressing out. Go for a walk. Get a drink of water. Read a book.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone.
If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, soybean crops are sitting in the fields. China not interested in buying. We're talking tariffs with James Vanderloo. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
And welcome back, everybody. Welcome. If you're just joining us, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, he is one of my favorite guests to talk to, well, about almost anything. But I'm really excited to have him on my program today to talk about his run to become Wisconsin's next governor in 2026. He is Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. And we're going to get to this in a little bit. But one of the things that I'm going to ask Mr. County Executive about eventually is how different it was for him to go from being a state representative to being responsible for running a really big government, and the importance of his experience running a government and being in charge of making sure that things got done, because that's how I think we turn voters out. But I want to start at the beginning. Welcome, welcome, Mr. David Crowley. It's great to have you back on the show.
It is always a pleasure to be on the show with you, Maggie. How are you?
We're hanging in there. I need a response tattooed on my forehead these days, as well as can be expected in these troubling times. We'll get to a little bit of that, but I just want to start out at the basics. You have been at the helm of Milwaukee County through what I can describe as really, really very challenging times. You came into office in the middle of COVID. We still had incredible protests and movement happening in response to George Floyd's murder, mm-hmm. asking for, I think, what it all can agree on is the necessary rebuilding and reinvigoration of trust between communities and police. All of that was happening at that time. It has been a budgetary uphill battle every budget for you. You went through the sales tax debate. You had to lock in the Brewers Stadium funding. Mm-hmm. There were so many huge items while trying to address housing and the opioid crisis and so many things. You survived all that. You won a landslide reelection victory. Why not just stick with being, I think, one of the county's most beloved county executives, very well liked in the county? Why not just win that election for as long as you want to be in politics? Why step out of that accomplishment and the winning formula you got in the county? Why throw your hat in the ring to become governor, especially in times like this?
Well, one, thank you for that introduction. And, you know, we've been able to tackle a lot of different issues while making sure that we can continue to serve the people of Milwaukee County with the different programs and services they absolutely rely on outside the politics that we in the conversations and the political bickering that happens at the state and federal level. We've had to show up. And, you know, I spent 7 years in the state capitol, so I know exactly how Madison works. And we've gotten things done with the Republican controlled legislature. And for the past 5 years, I have been running the largest county in the state of Wisconsin, the most populated, most diverse county. I represent close to 1 million people, which is a sixth of our entire state's population. But I also manage one of the largest budgets in Wisconsin with a $1.4 billion budget. And since May of 2020, not only did, you know, we get through the pandemic, some of the most challenging times that many of us have been alive, we've also been able to tackle many of the biggest issues facing our community. We've tackled public safety. We've tackled public health. We've focused on fiscal recovery. We've been able to invest in small businesses and entrepreneurs across Milwaukee County. We've seen more affordable housing being built up in many of our suburban communities. We've made government more accessible through our no wrong door model of approach. We've cut our carbon emissions in half. Oh, and we've been able to deliver the largest property tax cut in Milwaukee County's history. And so I'm entering this race because I know that I'm the only one in this race who not only has legislative experience, but also experience running a government. And I'm the only candidate who's going to be able to deliver on the promises that I'm talking about on this campaign trail, because we've already done it. And so that's why I'm entering this race, to make sure that we can deliver for the people. And I know that folks are looking for a governor for all of us.
Do you feel called to the work, David, if I may? Because what you're describing is many accomplishments. Mm-hmm. And I can hear, and from our conversations, not on live radio, I know how much you care about people and that you actually want to see the results. Do you feel called to step up to try to do that in a larger jurisdiction for the state? Because that's what I'm hearing from you. You know, we were able to do this under incredibly difficult circumstances in Milwaukee County, and you can lead the state to deliver those same kind of results to all Wisconsinites.
You know, when you think about, you know, Governor Tony's tenure, you know, he's been delivering for all of us, you know, with a divided government. He's always said that he was going to do right, you know, by the people and not what was politically convenient. And we need strong executive leadership who's going to bring us to the table. Look, folks are tired of politicians who talk big and deliver small. They're tired of politicians who focus on, you know, cultural and partisan issues versus delivering real results is going to change lives. And that's what we've done in Milwaukee County. And so I want to be able to show people that there are individuals who are running for office and in office who absolutely care about those they represent. One of my favorite quotes is by Teddy Roosevelt. No one cares what you know until they know how much you care. And so for me, my calling is being able to be there for people, being able to be there at my best when people are dealing with their worst times. And as elected officials, as community leaders, just in general, that's what we should be focused on.
Folks, if you're just joining us, that's Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. He has formally, officially now, thrown his hat in the ring to become Wisconsin's next governor. You'll see his name on the Wisconsin Democratic primary ticket come the spring. When you stand back and you look at the challenges that are facing the state, Mr. County Executive, what do you see as the top one, two, or three things that would be really first on your agenda to try to accomplish? And let's focus, there are process things that we could talk about, the shared revenue formulas, we could talk about the public education formulas, and maybe you want to go there, but that stuff gets a little wonky, right? But I just mean from the perspective that you were just talking about, regular people issues, the kitchen table type of issues. Yeah. What are the three things that you believe that we need to deliver better on for all Wisconsinites?
Well, I would say the highest priority for all of us to tackle is this affordability crisis that we're all seeing, right? You know, my wife and I, we went grocery shopping and we're seeing the increase in our groceries. We're seeing the increase in our utility bills. I'm talking to folks here throughout the state of Wisconsin, and they're seeing an increase in these rising prices, and they're being squeezed every single day. And we need to figure out how we can provide a little bit of relief. Now, let's point out the elephant in the room. A lot of this, the rising prices, the cost of inflation, is happening due to policies that we're seeing coming out of Washington, D.C. I mean, we have to be honest about that, but that doesn't mean that we cannot work to make things a little bit affordable, a little bit more affordable, right? And so how do we make sure that we're investing in small businesses, good paying, family sustaining jobs in every corner of our state, even union jobs, but also fully funding our public school systems to make sure that our children are ready for the opportunities that are not only available today, but making sure that they're available and ready for the skills and the jobs that's going to be coming tomorrow and in our future. How do we make sure that all of our brothers and sisters all across this state, you know, continue to have affordable and accessible access to healthcare whenever and wherever they need it? And these are the issues that we have been working on here in Milwaukee County. These aren't Democratic issues. These aren't Republican issues. These are issues that people care about in the state of Wisconsin. And I've been delivering on those things here in Milwaukee County, and I plan on doing the same as the next governor.
Let's talk a little bit specifics about a couple of those things. And I wanted to start with affordable housing. One of the great, I think, policy tensions when we start to talk about affordable housing is we've hopefully moved a bit away from not in my backyard. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a will in most communities. There's widespread acknowledgement that housing is placing many young people, many young families out of the home ownership market. We see private equity gobbling up single family homes, not just in Milwaukee and Dane counties, but we're seeing Kenosha, Brown, Washington, Waukesha, Ozaukee, all the way up into our northern counties and communities. When we talk about affordable housing, what can be done at the state level? Are you talking about direct government investments because the feds have basically turned the spigot off in many instances when it comes to actually building affordable or subsidized housing? How do you help solve that problem at the state level? What can state government do to make this better?
Well, we've been able to do a lot here in Milwaukee County, and I'll start with what we've been able to do and how we can transfer that to the state. You know, we've invested more than $100 million in affordable housing here in Milwaukee County, as well as within our eviction prevention MKE program, helping people, helping thousands of families stay within their homes. And when people have the opportunity to have a home over their head, knowing where they're going to sleep, it makes it easier to deal with all those other issues that may be going on, focusing on their education, focusing on their own health, or focusing on their own employment. And so we need more affordable housing. We have built 100 affordable housing units right here within the King Park neighborhood in collaboration with Habitat for Humanity and the MM Group. We're building our first affordable subdivision of single family homes in the Oak Creek area, where this is home ownership opportunities, as well as in Franklin. We have a project happening there for developmental and intellectual disabilities, adults who need that level of assistance. And so we have to change the mindsets of what affordable housing is, but we also have to focus on attainable housing at the exact same time. Because there are individuals who can afford and don't need affordable housing, yet the housing stock is not available. And so we need to make sure that we're working with our local communities, our local partners, making sure that the zoning, making sure that there aren't barriers in creating these housing options for our community members. Because when we have the ability to move people in, that means that more people are spending money. That means more people are spending on their property taxes, which means that we can help lower the burden across our entire state.
Mr. County Executive, if I could reach over these radio waves and give you a hug, I absolutely would, because you said two things to me that as an economist drive me up the wall. We can all, and I really think about housing. The term affordable housing has a lot of connotations, right? And people have sometimes a reaction to it. When we talk about housing access, so you've got people that are at great risk of eviction, which leads to job loss, which becomes this terrible cycle. Yep, we need interventions. We need that sort of affordable housing. Providing access to people who have saved but just can't access the credit markets to do that, just cannot find a home that is on the market for longer than 2 days that isn't burdened by a bidding war that they can actually afford and make work. That requires increased supply. We all know this from basic microeconomics. When you see prices that are through the roof, you might have a supply problem. And we indeed have that supply problem. And you also mentioned the other thing, Mr. County Executive, that I wanted to give you a hug about, and that is looking really hard at zoning laws, whether we're looking at that from a tax incentive perspective and how that works, but encouraging municipalities to look at those zoning laws really carefully. Do we have undue burdens to increasing housing supply, especially single family or small multifamily housing units across the state? That is the key, because once people feel like they've got a safe and stable place to live, boy, that rocket propels them into all sorts of other successes. We're going to stay with Mr. County Executive, soon to be potentially the governor of this great state. He'll be on the ballot in the spring. We're going to talk about why his experience matters, why it matters so much that you've actually run something when you're proposing to run an organization as large, as diverse, and sometimes as divided as the state of Wisconsin. So stay with us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Does Trump's big bill end taxes on tips and overtime? No. President Donald Trump's new law exempts certain tip and overtime income from federal tax. But the deductions expire in 2028 and come with limits. Workers earning under $150,000 can deduct up to $25,000 in tips and $12,500 in overtime. Social Security, Medicare, and state taxes still apply. The Tax Policy Center says 2% of households will benefit from the tip provision, saving $1,800. The White House estimates $1,400 in average annual savings from the overtime deduction. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A bipartisan bill banning members of Congress from owning or trading individual stocks has been introduced in the U.S. House. It appears the reform could pass, due in no small part to a tax break sweetener just for members. For years, allegations have plagued members of Congress who allegedly traded stocks on the basis of inside information. The Brennan Center for Justice points to Senator Dianne Feinstein's February 2020 trades prior to pandemic-related market losses and Representative Rob Bresnahan's sale of hospital development bonds only a month after he voted to cut Medicaid and put those hospitals at risk of closure. September 3rd, Republican Representative Chip Roy introduced H.R. 5106, also called the Restore Trust in Congress Act, co-sponsored by Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and 15 others. The bill allows current members 180 days to divest of individual stocks, but allows investing in mutual funds, index funds, municipal bonds, and treasury bonds. But one critic writes in Forbes that the reform comes with a sweetheart deal, allowing members to divest and defer capital gains taxes until after they leave Congress, a huge gift to multimillionaire members. Both House Speaker Mike Johnson and House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries have signaled they will support the bill. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Matt Nair on air.
Dr. Kristen Lierley is here.
I also don't want to, you know, sit and doom scroll before I go to sleep at night because that's not good for my brain. It doesn't help my sleep patterns. Right. And
my brother-in-law, you went to medical school with him. He said at 2 hours, turn off all screens. At 1 hour, get yourself ready for bed. And he goes, and Greg, bed is for two things. That's it.
What are they?
Moving on.
Sleeping in
listen
chest.
Listen to you laugh.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Next up at top of the 5 o'clock hour, I'm really excited to be joined by Representative Ahmad Rivera Wagner. He's from Assembly District 90 up in Green Bay. We're going to be talking about who's actually responsible for the closing of housing for veterans. What actually went down in the state budget? Who actually was trying to get these programs refunded? We're going to break it down with Representative Rivera Wagner and what you can do about it to make sure that veterans in the Fox Valley have a safe place to sleep and we don't leave them out in the cold, literally, after their service in defense of this country. But right now, I'm joined by candidate for the governorship, County Executive David Crowley. He's sticking around with us. David, I want to get into, you've talked about a lot of the things which I was very fortunate enough to bear witness to, the accomplishments of your time as county executive for Milwaukee County. As you noted, Milwaukee County is one-sixth of the state's population. You've managed a $1.4 billion budget. You've gone through enormous challenges as a county executive. But you came from the state legislature. You were there for 7 years. And so you, my friend, have the perspective, a thing that I talk about all the time, especially when I talk to brand new legislators, whether that's in a local government or state government. Yeah. Hey, figure out how the budgets work, figure out how the different departments work, who are the experts within these different agencies that you can call, figure it out, ask questions, know what a state government does versus a local government versus the feds, and how that all, where those overlaps are, how those grant programs work, all that kind of stuff. You've sat in both seats. Tell us what the difference is and why it is so important to voters, whether they plan to vote for a Republican, a Democrat, or Daffy Duck, why it is critical for voters to be asking themselves and the candidates, do you have the requisite experience to run an organization that is as big and unwieldy as the state of Wisconsin?
That's a great question. And, you know, I'll try to answer with the limited time frame that we have. But one thing that I learned being in the state capitol for 7 years is that, you know, in the state legislature, a lot of folks make a lot of decisions that affect folks on the ground at the local level, at city, towns, and villages, school boards, our public school systems. And they may not actually understand what the impact is, right? And so, you know, I remember, you know, becoming a state representative, I had a staff of about three. When I became the Milwaukee County executive, now I have a staff of about 3,800, 4,000 people. And there is a level of imposter syndrome that you can have when you think about becoming a CEO at a young age, managing so many folks. And I would say one of the first things that I did was something that most elected officials don't do. And I went and received some business coaching to have a better understanding of the questions that I should be asking. You know, what are some of my own limitations that I'm putting over myself and understanding what my strengths and weaknesses are. But more importantly, you know, as a CEO, you have to know how to put a team together. And when you think about who's going to be the next governor, you have to make sure that they're putting people in place who not only understands what each department does, but the impact that they make on those that we serve and the indirect impacts that we may make that things can have from policy decisions that happen through the legislature. And so for me, having that balance of both gives me a wide view of exactly what is at stake, what has been at stake, and what more we need to do as a state to make sure that local units of government can continue to deliver for the people that they represent, and making sure that the state government is not abdicating their role, their responsibility. Because a lot of the times when we look at it, it's been the state who's been defunding, right? We see so many communities who have had to go to referendum just to make sure that their public school systems are actually funded. And they're not even fully funded to the capacity that they need to be funded at. And that's because the state lost its way. And so we need a governor who understands the struggle, who understands how to get things done in the legislature, but also who knows how to bring people to the table and allow their voices to lean towards the solutions that we need to find.
A couple things there that I think speak volumes about who you are as a man and who you are as a leader, David. And the first is that you knew that you needed some coaching to be the best leader that you could be, to have some sight lines and some personal insight about what you might not be the best at, but what your strengths are, how to overcome, how to ask for people to help you with the things that are your weaknesses. If every elected official in every office, no matter how small or powerful, had that same commitment to humbly knowing yourself in a way that allows you to serve, to be a public servant in the best way possible, we would be as a country in a far better situation than we are today. The second thing that you talked about, David, was having an actual understanding how legislation impacts people, what the results are. And I think that's really critical. It's been too many times for me to count when I've talked with a legislator about a legislative proposal and I'm trying to explain to them that their desired outcome will not occur from the legislation that they're proposing because it's not how the system works or the incentives are wrong. And you having been on both sides of that discussion and knowing how those systems or how legislation has to be implemented in the executive branch of government. Yeah. Again, I wish that everyone running for an executive branch government position, and you rightly call them CEOs, have that experience as well. David, we've got about 30 seconds. Closing thoughts to your voters out there in 2026.
Well, I just want to say thank you, Maggie, for this opportunity. And I want folks to visit my website, CrowleyForWI.com. Sign up, donate, volunteer, become a part of this movement. I am looking to be the governor for all of us. So doesn't matter what's behind your name, Democrat, Independent, or Republican. The parties aren't working for you, but I will.
The parties aren't working for you, but he will. Crowley for Wisconsin, CrowleyForWI.com. Go check it out. Up next, we've got Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner, Assembly District 90, talking about how we make sure we do not leave our veterans out in the cold. Stay with us. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Michelle Franzen. In Utah, Tyler Robinson appeared virtually from jail to face charges in the fatal shooting of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. The 22-year-old wore a sleeveless green protective vest as he answered the judge's questions.
State of Utah versus Tyler James Robinson. Could you state your name?
Tyler James Robinson.
Earlier, Utah prosecutors announcing they're seeking the death penalty.
With his DNA allegedly found on the rifle trigger, Tyler Robinson is now facing the death penalty if convicted. Utah County Attorney Jeff Gray saying he will seek capital punishment for Robinson. According to Gray, Robinson's mother said Robinson had become more political and left-leaning recently and that his mother told police.
When asked why he did it, Robinson explained there is too much evil in the guy, referring to Charlie Kirk, spreads too much hate.
ABC's Alex Stone, the judge, says the court is also appointing an attorney for Robinson. This is ABC News.
Farm news?